The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com with us for the next hour, presented by Sealmaster and Rapid Response Generators. Rapid Response Generators, power when it matters most. PK, Chad Brinker stepping down from the Tennessee Titans. We've discussed it throughout the show here today. So we were waiting for you to get in. I'm very interested to see what you have to think, have to say on this. You know, the power reshuffling in this organization has been extensive at this point over the last few years. You've gone from Vrabel to Carthon to Brinker to Borgonzi. You've got coaches hired and fired in between all those things. And now you've got Borgonzi running the show, and Brinker is now out. He put the statement out there where, you know, he's a personnel guy and he's looking forward to getting back into personnel somewhere, and it just kind of feels like he walked away from this. What's your read on Brinker stepping down, the timing of it all, and how the organizational structure either did or may have contributed to this?
Well, I mean, you know, he willingly took on that role, seemed like. I guess it would have been pretty bold to quit in the moment when they said, hey, you know, we want the guy you hired to take the personnel stuff. The structural thing, you know, if they really believe in the structure as they set it up, where, you know, all of this stuff is too much for a GM to handle and you have to have somebody dealing with all of the non-personnel stuff and have that off the GM's plate, be it facilities and analytics and research and development and all of that stuff, then they're going to need to hire somebody in that position. Joe was incredibly soft on the idea of it being Bryce Wasserman. I think if it's Bryce Wasserman, that would be really bad.
Do you know that he's incompetent?
I didn't say he's incompetent, but
that was my only point, is that, like, we don't know. I just know that it would be publicly annihilated.
I just know that if you have somebody that's that close to the owner, then the front office divides into two camps. People who spend all day kissing that guy's ass to make sure that they're in, and there are already people that qualify in that realm. My number one job before my job responsibilities is to stay tight with Bryce Wasserman and not do anything that Bryce Wasserman can report back is something that would upset the owner. Or other people who behind the scenes are like, can you believe how this thing is running? This guy is in power, might have some good qualities, but didn't climb the traditional ladder here, didn't do the work that we did, and are filled with resent over the way things became. And that is not a good functional way to order front office. And I just don't think it's a healthy thing. At the times that the Titans have involved people or tried to involve people related to ownership or powerful people in the organization, it's never gone well.
That's a good point. You finally made a positive contribution to the show in 36 minutes. Yeah, congratulations.
You're welcome. So I think that is looming. And I also think this thing, like, the people they've hired to do things consistently haven't done them. Rand Carthon was hired to be the GM. He hires Chad Brinker, who quickly leapfrogs him. Brinker is empowered to hire the GM, and appears to do well with Borgonzi, who quickly leapfrogs him. How are they missing on people maintaining what they're hired for in such short order? This isn't like, well, 3 years later, we see that this guy, hey, he's a real overachiever and he needs to be higher up on the masthead. It's in a year. They're like, oh, this guy's better than the guy above him. We're going to vault him over him, which suggests to me they're just not doing it right. And it's a wobbly, unstable place. And so everybody
to me that Amy is easily swayed, very easily.
It suggests to me now, like, okay, everybody's like, okay, well, now it's set, fine. Which, you know, is easy to say in April or May. But we need to see things going on. Again, I think Borgonzi's doing a good job, but I would urge people not to put a chef's hat on him or do all that stuff. Let's see some of this stuff play out before anointing him. I think now he's getting a lot of power. I think absolute power tends to lead to problems. It's good if there's a check, some kind of check on him. I'm not saying that Brinker was necessarily that, but it would be good if whoever gets that spot has some sway with him, which apparently Brinker had less and less. And Joe raised the point, and I'll bang the same drum. If you hate Brinker and you're excited by his departure and you're all in on Borgonzi, well, Borgonzi's not here without Brinker.
And Brinker's not here without Rand.
It all goes
you
back.
Forgot that part, Rand hater.
It all goes back.
Balzata! This thing's got to die. It's got to die.
No.
Our one last day.
Yeah. It's Borgonzi.
Today's the last day. That's good. It was never good, and now it's worse than it's ever been.
It's good.
It is good. Thank you, Ian. Yeah, we Team Berserker here. So how important, PK, is there's so many angles of this, but how important is this job? This job that is now open, because we know Borgonzi, it's his team. It's been his team. We know he has a ton of dudes. I mean, I thought we played some of Dave Ziegler's presser yesterday. I thought it was pretty freaking good. I mean, that's what it's about. Get good football players and win football games. These massive corporate structures, when it's really just about, can you, you know, pick good football players and pick a good football coach and win games or no? But there is a lot, I think, that goes with the job that Brinker eventually got kicked up to. So how important is that? Is this higher? I mean, I don't think this news really moves the needle in the NFL other than it's just more upheaval for the Titans. But is this an important thing for the organization?
Well, I think it's an important thing for the organization in that the way they sold it was this is stuff that Borgonzi's not going to have to do while he focuses almost entirely on personnel. And so he's not going to do research and development, and he's not going to worry about the analytics or the salary cap or facilities and stuff like that. Now, you could maybe make the case that the head of facilities will take care of facilities and the head of analytics will take care of analytics. But all those people need to report somewhere. And if they're reporting to Borgonzi, then he is technically in charge of that. And if he's reporting to somebody in Brinker's role, then it really isn't his, so to speak, or it's his on a very, on a much less full level. And so I think that makes sense. I think they've sold that relatively well, but you've got to have a guy that's into it. And Brinker, if we're believing what's said, and that's the evidence I'm getting, suggests that's real. That's the other place they put themselves in. It's hard to believe what they say on these scrambles because they're so damn frequent.
I totally agree. Let's head back to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Adam in Portland to the program. Adam, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, Robbie, man. You know where he lost me? So I can remember the exact moment that he lost me is when he just come out and said, "I read Moneyball, and let me tell you what it's about." And I'm like, no freaking way I want this dude anywhere around my football team. It's the same feeling I had when Brian Callahan's in practice, and he goes, "What is it with you guys throwing people out of practice? I've never even heard of that." That's where he lost me. Like, these guys, it doesn't mean they're bad people or that they don't have some type of skill, but you can, like, people's true colors and their actual skills start to show up when you, at little moments. And mine was the Moneyball thing with him. I really know what he did. And even sitting there watching Carnell Tate go through and, like, talking to different people when he got drafted, were they going to hand the phone to Brinker and be like, "Hey, this guy works here too, and he wants to talk to you"? Like, no, of course not. I think it was a good move. I think Titans got better.
Thank you, Adam. Appreciate the call. PK.
I don't know that him talking or not talking to a draft pick is relevant there. It's showing you why he may not want to be in this job anymore, because he'd like to be on the phone with the guy.
Well, another thing you pointed out at your website, what do you think this means for Reggie McKenzie in the aftermath of all this?
I mean, I just think it's a fair thing to watch. You know, perception is that when they brought those two guys in, Ziegler and McKenzie, that McKenzie was Brinker's and Ziegler was Borgonzi's. And so has McKenzie, you know, been absorbed into being a Brinker guy, being a Titans guy, or was he Brinker's guy?
Yeah.
If he's regarded still as Brinker's guy, then you could see the potential for him to maybe move on as well. So I think that'll tell us a little bit about how much they've melded everything together over there and how much maybe there are camps.
A lot more to get into with PK coming up next. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. Paul Kuharsky with us here on the program from paulkuharsky.com. Let's head back to our phone line. Welcome in Ed in New Jersey to the program. Ed, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, good morning, guys. So I'm trying to follow the the days of our Titans here, and I can't remember what season or episode, but when Ziegler got hired, Paul, you're saying that was definitely a Borgonzi move and that was not a prearranged marriage? Because I thought it happened real quickly, like at the same time almost.
My recollection and perception is that he was Borgonzi bringing a lieutenant.
Okay. Yeah, it just doesn't appear to me like, if I'm Borgonzi, I leave that well enough alone, even if it was prearranged, because it seems like if you bring in like a true mentor or mentee, whatever it is that you could to be mentored, that person is just going to be your replacement in this organization. It's so toxic. So even if it is inherited, I just don't think a Ziegler is like, that Borgonzi is going to mentor Ziegler. I mean, it could be the other way around based on experience, but I don't know. It just seems like maybe that's the safest spot, is just leave well enough alone.
Yeah.
I wasn't suggesting Ziegler's in trouble potentially. I was suggesting that McKenzie, who is more of a Brinker guy, could be. But I do think, my impression all along has been that both Brinker and Borgonzi really like this stacked up, heavy, loaded top of the front office, which is Ziegler, McKenzie, and Sagony, who came from Cleveland a year later.
Well, I think the question I have in the aftermath of all of this, and we've talked about the idea of stability forever, it seems like now with the Titans, and I agree with you. I think Borgonzi is doing a good job. We talked earlier in the show there's a lot, if you're a Titans fan right now, that you could point to in terms of hope moving forward. So, you know, my hope is you get to the end of next season and they've improved and they've won 7-8 football games and Ward's taking a step forward, and there's no question that the coach is coming back next year, the general manager's coming back next year, the quarterback is coming back next year. Having said that, that's just not been the way it's been around here for a long time. So, like, one of the questions I have after this is, all right, well, this structure keeps changing, people falling in and out of favor with Amy Adams Strunk all the time around here. Is Borgonzi next if things don't go significantly better this next season? So,
well, right, she's always got a favorite, and there's always somebody that is not the favorite. And right now, they're down to two spots. And whoever gets hired, presuming somebody gets hired for this president of football operations spot, which they've sold as vitally important. That's the biggest question to me. They sold it as vitally important. Did they sell it as vitally important to create a spot for Chad Brinker, or did they sell it as vitally important because it's vitally important?
Right.
If they don't hire somebody in that spot, then they were BSing us. If they do hire somebody in that spot and think it's vitally important, then I don't think it's going to be one of these personnel guys because they don't want to be in personnel. So are you going outside to find somebody and letting Borgonzi hire somebody for that? That would tell me, yeah, it's vitally important. Are you promoting the son-in-law into that? That would tell me you're, I don't know, not as serious about it as I'd like you to be.
That it's more of a ceremonial position. That is definitely one of my big questions. Also, and I think if they do go out and hire a significant person for that job, I guess it would be easier for me to totally buy how this all went down. Because obviously with this organization, when things like this go down, people immediately think about, okay, so what's the real story? I mean, it'd be easy for me to buy it. It's just as simple as Brinker was in personnel most of his career. Things happen in Nashville. He ends up outside personnel. He wants to be in personnel. Some people, PK, throwing out, well, not many people, thankfully, but there is the, you know, did he know about, you know, playlists and Vrabel and whatever? Okay, that's pretty,
nothing to do with Vrabel.
Right. Nothing. But the other one that, like, Greg Rosenthal tweeted, like, you know, lost the power struggle with Mike Borgonzi. I mean, I think if that were the case, that, I guess that had already happened, if that was even a thing.
Yeah, it was a year ago. I mean,
is there any chance that's a fair way to characterize it? Or is it more just that Amy picks and chooses what she wants to do with people, and some people fall out of favor, some people fall into favor, and they're not really actively doing anything. She's just making those choices.
Well, I mean, look, there's contractually, I can't remember what the official title is, but there's a primary football I think that's it, primary football executive. And we were saying, like, when they were searching for Mike Borgonzi, like, why would somebody come here if Chad Brinker has the final say? And I found that language in an NFL document about the primary football executive. And Mike Borgonzi was technically the primary football executive from the get-go, which actually gave him final say on personnel. So the contractual documentation and what the Titans said was their structure were actually kind of conflicting, which is another part of why the league views the Titans as kind of overly complicated and whatever. So when it became official, I think part of Brinker's attitude was like, this is inevitable.
Yeah.
This is not a big surprise to me. And it's the way it should be. Now, is that him being a good soldier? Apparently, because he covets personnel. But where does he wind up? You know, is he going to go, you know, I would think he winds up with one of these jobs like Ziegler and McKenzie and Saginaw have now for somebody.
Back to Green Bay? Down there in Miami?
I think Green Bay did lose John Eric Sullivan.
Yep.
Have they filled in that?
Honestly, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't think so. Or maybe they promoted from within. That's what they do. I think they may have promoted from within. So maybe he ends up back there in some capacity. We'll get into the NFL draft and what the Titans have done with PK coming up next. Take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.
Robbie and Rex Road, presented by Green Ventures Landscaping. Property managers, if you manage it, they maintain it. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. Paul Kuharski with us here on the program. So, PK, what do you make of how the Titans came out of the draft here with Carnell Tate going at number 4? They trade back into the first round. They get Keldrick Falk. You go back into the second round at the back part of it, come away with Anthony Hill. They don't take interior offensive linemen until later in the draft. And we talked about that situation heading into it. But so overall, from Tate to how they handled offensive line to maybe not handling cornerback the way some expected heading into it, what do you make of the Titans and what they did in the NFL draft?
I mean, overall, it seems promising. A lot of potential there. You know, have some questions about Hill in coverage, which is the number one thing you need out of a off the ball linebacker, and they're playing him off the ball. I asked Dave Ziegler yesterday about the potential for Hill, who was a very good pass rusher as a linebacker in college, to play as a pass rusher, and they're not intending to do that. You know, would have liked to seen more of an emphasis on the offensive line. I don't want to say they're being cavalier about it, but I think they've got great expectations for some guys who don't necessarily warrant them based on what they've done so far, but that doesn't mean that they can't find production out of guys with upside who are reaching a point where they should take off, and that's, you know, more Schlottman and Volson and Slater. You know, I love Pat Coogan. He'd be my number one guy rooting for in this class because he's got all of those intangibles and he'd be a phenomenal talker and all of that. But if you look at some of the tape, I mean, physically, can he do it? They're relying a lot on toughness. Ziegler said something interesting about him yesterday in that he will reach his potential. Now, is his potential starting center, right, or is it, you know, a swing backup is what's to be determined. I did think Jackie Marshall, and you know, you're in the sixth round, you're looking for traits, and they saw some pass rush in him. But at a certain point, you got to stop with the defensive lineman and address some other things. So I was surprised there wasn't a defensive back in this class. Only the third time in the Titans era they didn't draft one.
I don't know if you were listening earlier, PK, but this is the third time since the merger that a quarterback has gone number one, followed by then the next draft, a receiver going in the top five. So, first of all, do you know the other two?
I was listening.
Okay. So, second of all, what is that? We didn't need that. We didn't need that little trivia question to answer the question, but what does that tell you about, what does all of this tell you about Cam Ward, Carnell Tate, and fair expectations in the next few years for them together?
Well, look, on the one hand, you know, out of a normal draft, you would say, if you're drafting a receiver fourth overall, he's got to come in, be the best receiver on your team for a long time. And I would still say the same thing about Carnell Tate. I don't think he's as good as a lot of guys who might have gone number four, who maybe went number 7 or 8 or 9 in some recent drafts because there were some quarterbacks, you know, higher or more defensive players of intrigue or more left tackles of intrigue. He can be very good. I mean, the question is, can he develop into more of a yards after catch, yards after contact guy, and the Titans believe that he can. But I think you need that in to be one of the league's very best wide receivers. I don't know that you need that to be the best Titans draft pick receiver of the Titans era. You know, A.J. Brown certainly had it. You can be better than A.J. Brown in different ways by catching some balls deeper, contorting your body, going up and making high point contested catches and the like. And so I'm going to be optimistic about the guy. I think he's a heck of a player. And I think this was a down draft. And whoever they took at four, barring Jeremiah Love, probably we'd be having a conversation. Bailey and Love, we wouldn't really be having tough conversations about. Everybody else, there was some kind of hole or downside that we would be talking about them not being as supreme a player, as questionless a player as you would want to get it for and as you would expect in a regular draft.
Do you get the sense that it was Bailey, Love, Tate, and that maybe they didn't give a ton of consideration to Reese at number four?
Yeah. I think there were concerns about Reese, like, not definitely an edge rusher. And if he's not an edge rusher, then he's a guy, who needs to be moved around a lot. And the Titans aren't necessarily looking to move guys around a lot. They're kind of a more straightforward front.
But see, I disagree. I mean, the tough conversation with Love would be the same thing that I'm trying to get at with Tate, which is, I mean, I hear what you're saying. You know, there are some years where certainly he wouldn't go there, just like there's some years Cam Ward didn't go there. But the bottom line is they did go there. And so the tough conversation with Love would be what we said before, which is, okay, well, if you're going to take a running back there, and you're going to immediately make him, and this is the difference with him and Tate, you're going to immediately make him one of the highest paid at his position with some of the most guaranteed money at his position in the NFL. He needs to be not just good, really good, he needs to be one of the great backs in the league, one of the best offensive weapons in the league. And I'm just, to me, Tate, of course, the evaluation says he's not Jamar Chase, and that I don't think that's a fair, he's not Jamar Chase or some of these guys, or he's not Jeremiah Smith, who's coming out next year, but he needs to be a great player, right?
I mean, yeah.
Is it not that simple at four?
Yeah. You need to get a great player at four. I think the odds of Jeremiah Love being a great player are probably better than Carnell Tate being a great player, having come to terms with the idea that you're setting positional value aside. I was kind of presuming we were doing that.
Yep. How concerned are you from the standpoint of lack of production from Keldrick Falk? I mean, he is 20. He's very young. But you're talking two sacks last year.
Two sacks with 30 pressures.
Yeah.
So he's around the quarterback a bunch, and he's not getting him to the ground. Why? You know, and he talked a lot about, you know, I'm not low enough, not taking on the quarterback low enough to get him to the ground. He did have a better year the year before, seven sacks. So he's got better in him, and he's certainly got the physical characteristics you want. Look, Tate, you can make a more reasoned explanation for why he didn't come out with huge numbers. Start with Jeremiah Smith. Robert Saleh said, hey, it's not his fault that Ohio State's in a lot of games where they're shutting it down at halftime. You know, you can – everything's got its own set of circumstances, and you can see Tate's more clearly than you can see Falk's. Nevertheless, it sounds like, you know, most of the league thought Falk was, you know, an 18 to 22 level player, and the Titans get him at 31, which is a pretty great value. But certainly he's not fully developed. And so it's funny, you know, a lot of these guys in this draft are closer to fully developed at 23, 24, even 25. The Titans in their first three have, 21-year-old to 20-year-old to 21-year-old who are younger and have more upside for the Titans to develop them, and their coaches have to get to work and see to it that they are developed.
So you've got a second-round edge, you got a first-round edge, first one since Derek Morgan, and as we've just talked about, you got Ward to Tate. If you took those two combinations, PK, you took Ward and Tate in back-to-back years, you took Oladejo and Falk, which of those two pairings are you more confident in living up to their draft positioning at this point?
I think Ward and Tate. I don't think between Oladejo, who's converting and had a very limited first year, he hasn't proven that he can do it yet, and Fox's production is a big concern. If I'm spending, what was Oladejo, like 54?
Yeah, in that neighborhood.
If I'm spending 54 and 31 on two pass rushers, and we're going into the second season for the first and the first season for the second, I would like to feel a lot better about, like, I know what I'm getting here.
52, by the way,
from the edge, 52. Yep. I would like to feel a lot better about, I know what I'm getting here and what exactly the upside is. I think with Ward and Tate, I mean, it's not like there aren't question marks about Ward, but we saw him ascending as the season ended in bad circumstances, and now he's got a lot of balls dropped on him last year. Wandale Robinson doesn't drop passes. Carnell Tate doesn't drop passes. Another new back in the mix with Nick Singleton, who could break away some. And then it all circles back to the target spots that we're going to point at over and over with those two offensive line spots. And I wrote, I'll retweet it shortly, they got 16 padded practices in training camp to sort out those five guys for those two spots. That stuff's going to go by in a flash.
Yep. 615-737-1025, our phone number. One more segment with PK coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Paul Kuharski with us here on the program, taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025. PK, you mentioned Singleton coming in. What do you think that means for the running back room? And I guess specifically where we've talked a lot about Spears. What do you think that means for Spears with Singleton coming in? Even though it's not a high pick at the running back position.
Yeah, it could mean bad things. I need to see him get out there and run. He seems like a better one-cut-and-go guy because he doesn't have great vision, and he does have great speed, and that's not what the Titans are designed to do run-wise. But again, Ziegler said yesterday, Brian Daboll's very good at getting guys in position to do what they do. And so if that turns out to be what Nick Singleton does best, they'll find opportunities for him to do it. So look, if he comes in and he's good, I think they'll find him opportunities. A lot of teams find opportunities for three guys. I think it tends to dilute rhythm. And so I'd get more in a hot hand situation. But I could see him taking carries away from not only Spears, but Pollard, who, sometimes feels washed. Now, it also circles back to the offensive line and, yep, and what kind of blocking they're providing. But on the chances that you get through that first level, Singleton's the best of those guys in terms of being able to get you more if you don't have to shake a lot of people. And maybe the best pass catcher. I know we tout Spears on that a lot, but he hasn't made the most of his opportunities, and I think Singleton will get a chance to do that.
What's your concern level with the offensive line, and did Dave Ziegler ease any of those concerns for you yesterday?
Well, he talked about still potentially bringing somebody in. I think I talked about the 16 padded practices. They got to get the guys they have and give them a chance to show what they've got and sort through that. So if you're bringing in another guy, I think you're quickly making a decision that you don't have enough. And I think if you're making that decision that you don't have enough, I mean – the tone I got was that the Kevin Zeitler stuff was probably remaining on hold. So if Zeitler's still out there and you go 2 weeks into camp and you really don't feel good about it, then maybe. But I've got a concern level. I mean, I don't think Carmona and certainly Coogan are likely to be opening day starters. So I think you're looking at some combination of Schlotman, Volson, and Slater. And I think you know, maybe we're underselling Volson in particular because he didn't play last year. You know, so if he was coming here last year off of what he'd done with the Bengals, he was a mid-level starting guard. Well, that's not ideal, but what we said about Carmen Brasillo right off the gate was that he was a guy that should be able to put together a line that had a couple first-rounders, a fourth-rounder, and, you know, a couple other pieces, which is what he's going to be presented with here.
So they've wrapped up the big part of free agency. The draft's over with. So, I mean, this is by and large what their team's going to be heading into next fall. What kind of team are we looking at here, you think?
Yeah, I do think – some people ask me, like, how many guys on the roster do I think are here? And I said probably 50 out of 53. I would move a little bit off of that now. I do get the sense, like, look – I've been told 60 draftable guys that didn't come out were gone. So that's two rounds of people, right? You're being awfully hopeful thinking undrafted guys are going to make your roster. And so I think they'd more like to fill in some of those spots with guys that have some experience. So who was it? You know, Elam last year, who wasn't good, but is it probably rates as better than an undrafted free agent. So I think you'll see people filtered in like that at some point for bottom depth spots. You're more likely to see a guy, say, two-thirds of the time, who's played some in the league than, you know, an undrafted rookie who it's hard to get up to snuff.
You didn't answer Robbie's question. Sorry. Is this a good football team, Paul?
Better. You know, I think it's a lot of work's been done on the floor. I don't know so much about the ceiling. And the floor was really low, and it needed a lot of work. So I think the floor's up. I'm not giving you a win total, but it's going to be, I would think, significantly better than 3 wins.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say, you know, when you factor in, also in this, as I've talked about the whole time, there needs to be individual growth from year one to year two with the quarterback. That by itself should take care of some of this, right, when it comes to the floor that you're talking about. But they've done a lot of work on the defensive side of the ball. They've got a good foundation there on the defensive side of the ball now. The part about the defense beyond the two edge rushers that we've talked about that concerns me is, like, they get one injury right now at corner, and they're in deep trouble at corner. Which concerns me.
They have some thinness problems still at some spots. And I'm not a big believer in Marcus Harris without competition or Tony Adams without competition. But they have stocked that defensive front so much. You know, if they can't get to the passer with four, they've overestimated some people. So I think they've got an identity there, you know, that starts with the defensive line.
Do you expect Hill to be a day one starter?
Yeah. Hill and Gray as the top two linebackers. If he's not, it's only a matter of time before he replaces Barton, I would think.
Going to be interesting to see how it plays out. PK, very busy week this week. Thank you for being with us.
Good to be with you, boys. Don't block the box and be sure to lock your locks.
That is going to do it for us today here on the program. We'll be back at 6 a.m. tomorrow. Charles Robinson will be with us for his weekly visit tomorrow here on the program from Yahoo Sports. Looking forward to that. We'll have you covered the rest of the day here reacting to Chad Brinker stepping down with the Tennessee Titans. Next man up with Jake Lyman is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk. Breathe, rechalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.